ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Test, test. 1, 2, 1, 2.
Brooms that rocked.
For tonight's Rooms That Rock series, we've been, we're going to take you inside an arena tonight to rock out, but not just any arena. There's only one that bills itself as the world's most famous arena. It's even trademarked that term. It recently played host to the most anticipated wedding in years, Taylor Swift tying the knot with Travis Kelce last month. I'm talking, of course, about Madison Square Garden in New York City. To guide us through the history, secrets, and style of this famous arena, Jesse Rivkin is here. Now, he is a music historian and author of This Must Be the Place, Music, Community, and Vanished Spaces in New York City. He's also a pop music historian for the Association for Cultural Equity. And what's more, he conducts music-themed tours of New York City as Walk on the Wild Side tours. That's a big resume, Jesse. Welcome to Nightlife.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the location, because the current Madison Square Garden is actually the fourth. What happened to the other locations?
Yeah, so I think sometimes when people come to New York City, they get a little confused because there is a Madison Square, Madison Square Park, and it is not where the garden is at all. Like, the original two locations of Madison Square Garden were around Madison Square, which is a little bit south of where it is currently. And, you know, I think the first one opened in like sometime in the early 1800s. So it's gone through several different incarnations. What we think of when we think of Madison Square Garden was built in the mid-60s. It opened in 1968. And that's like the big famous arena where, you know, where all this stuff happened. Previous iterations were, you know, home to like P.T. Barnum shows and boxing and, you know, I think the like famous rally from the American Nazi Party, just all these insane different things. But the garden as like a center for, you know, rock and roll and concerts and all that, that's the current iteration, which was built in the 60s.
And for anyone who's never been to Manhattan, I mean, it's a long way away, what's the typical ambience of a gig in Madison Square Garden?
You know, it's an arena, and to some degree, arena concerts all have a similar ambience wherever they are, you know, any kind of sports arena. That's sort of the point, in a way, is that it's a just the sort of big, like, pliable space that you can kind of do whatever you want with. I think, you know, you mentioned Taylor Swift's wedding. That's certainly an extreme example of it, where it was like turned into this, you know, almost literally a garden with all these crazy things in it. But nevertheless, when you go into the garden, I think just the weight of all the history of everything that's happened there, it does sort of like seep out of the walls a little bit, you know? Maybe it's just a psychological thing, just knowing that you're in Madison Square Garden. It gives a certain heft to whatever it is that's happening there.
And New York is obviously not short of legendary music venues. You know, the Carnegie Hall, Radio City Music Hall come to mind. But as a music venue, what's special about Madison Square Garden to you? Where do you personally rank it amongst New York's concert venues?
Oh, boy. I mean, the ranking thing is so hard to do because it's impossible to compare an arena to, you know, let's say a small nightclub.
Yeah,
or even a place like Carnegie Hall. But,
yeah,
you know, the thing that makes the garden what it is, I think, is for a long time it was the only arena in New York City. That's no longer true. There's the Barclays Center in Brooklyn now. But for a long time, it was the arena in New York. And so anything at that scale just, you know, by default took place there. And so you know, everything from like the, you know, Led Zeppelin filmed, The Song Remains the Same there. Like you can see the Rolling Stones there and Gimme Shelter. Elvis played there, you know, David Bowie's played there. The Beastie Boys did a movie there. And even just beyond all the music, like it's, you know, where the Knicks play, and it's where the Ali versus Frazier fight took place. And so the, like, it's sort of comparable to Carnegie Hall in a way, in just that the history kind of imbues it with like this sort of extraordinary status. So, you know, honestly, the sight lines aren't all amazing, and sometimes the sound is terrible, and you're not always necessarily going to have the most amazing experience at the Garden, but just by virtue of it being what it is, it kind of sets a tone, you know, for what you're going to experience there.
We've got a text from John of Coburg. Nice to hear from you, John. And John says that the concert where John Lennon joined Elton John on stage at Madison Square Garden, I played that track just before, was the famous one where Elton reintroduced John Lennon to Yoko backstage after the gig. Oh, okay. So John says, Lennon and Yoko separated in 73. Yes, I do remember that. And Lennon shifted to LA for 20 months of hell-raising productive music recording, which is Mind Games, Walls and Bridges, Rock and Roll, and production. Two of Harry Nilsson's albums. Oh, love Nilsson. A Mick Jagger EP and singles from Elton John, Bowie and Ringo Starr. He got back with Yoko and retired from music for 5 years. Thank you, John. Thank you for that little rock history. It's all about that for tonight's Rooms That Rocked series. We are speaking to Jesse Rifkin, music historian and author of, and also runs Walk on the Wild Side tours in New York City. Look, Jesse, we've all heard the Sinatra song, you know, New York is the city where if you could make it there, you can make it anywhere. But making it as an artist to Madison Square Gardens is, would you say it's a career highlight?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, playing the Garden, I think, kind of like is shorthand for saying that you've arrived at a certain tier of your career, you know, especially if you are able to sell it out. Like selling out the Garden really symbolizes something in terms of, you know, maybe just like a degree of legacy that you're almost guaranteed from that point on.
Oh, Sean has texted in. Sean, I love this. Monty Python sold Albatross there. I didn't realize that was Madison Square Garden where they did the Albatross sketch. Well, I'm sure they did it other places, but oh, yes. Thank you, Sean, for sharing that. And Sean, I can't tell you how much I love this because, Sean, I promised Greg from Canberra that I would play Albatross by Fleetwood Mac later on in the show when we had our calming music. So you've just given me another excuse to play that. I will find the time. Thank you, Sean. Look, being such an important venue, Jesse, there's a veritable who's who who's played there over the years. Which acts stand out to you?
I mean, you know, we've already mentioned some of them. I think the footage of the Rolling Stones there in Gimme Shelter is just this, you know, some of the most extraordinary footage that you're ever going to see of the Rolling Stones at one of their career peaks. I think a sort of really interesting and fun thing at the Garden, you know, Taylor Swift was the second rock star to get married there. Sly Stone was married there in the middle of, or at the beginning of a Sly and the Family Stone concert. Yeah, it was like this big surprise.
So it wasn't a wedding per se, it was worked into the concert.
Exactly, yes. There's, you know, it's incredible. He wore this like gold lamé cape. You know, sort of like at the beginning of his decline artistically, but it's still a pretty significant moment in his career. I think, you know, what was ostensibly going to be the final LCD Sound System concert took place there when they broke up. And then, of course, they got back together like 3 years later or something. Right. But at the time, it seemed like a big deal. The concert for Bangladesh that George Harrison put on was there with like Bob Dylan and Ravi Shankar and...
Well, that's the one, because Prince has come up a lot tonight, and I mistook Prince's legendary solo. It was at the concert for George at Royal Albert Hall, but it was at Madison Square Garden, right? For the concert
that
in
Bangladesh? The concert for Bangladesh was like 1973 or something.
Okay, I mixed it up. Concert for something that's definitely not the concert for George, but it's George adjacent. I've mixed it up again. Oh, gosh. Look, Mark from Risdon Vale says, the legend Bob Marley played there June 17th, 1971. Oh, gosh, so many. It just wants to make me play all the wonderful songs. And... Kiss ended their makeup tours there. I wish would people write these? I mean, is that facetious, Jesse? I sometimes myself.
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't. Yeah, Kiss. I don't know that. Honestly, I don't know enough about Kiss, but I know that at one point they stopped wearing makeup.
That is a fact. Yes. Okay. Okay.
But then they started wearing makeup again. So,
well, you know. Beauty. Well, as Judge Judy says, you know, beauty fades. Well, the end of the rest of that saying is beauty fades, dumb is forever. But you know, you just what I'm saying is you might need it at some point.
Well, depending on how you feel about Kiss, you know.
Yeah. There's a couple Kiss fans here Final End of the Road tour. Okay, thank you for that clarification, anonymous texter. And Simon and Garfunkel, Robin says, was a highlight there. Yeah, so people have got all their greats. Any more that you can think of?
Yeah, there was a famous, I think it was the 30th anniversary of Bob Dylan's first record or something, but it was this big Bob Dylan thing that they had at the Garden where he headlined, but then all these other people covered Dylan songs, including George Harrison, including Tom Petty, Sinead O'Connor was there, and that was sort of like a controversial thing. Everybody from, you know, Johnny Cash, Lou Reed, and there's a live album of it. It's absolutely phenomenal live album to listen to.
We have to mention Billy Joel.
Yes.
How many times has he played Madison Square Garden, roughly? Do we know?
150.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, there
He's
was a period. Well, there was a period from 2014 to 2024 where he played once a month at the Garden. He was like, they called it like the Garden's first music franchise. You know, he was just an artist in residence.
Yeah. Sounds like a Vegas residency.
It kind of was, and, you know, I didn't attend, but because I don't like Billy Joel, but I know other people who did attend, and I heard that, you know, because of what it was, and because he kind of had this sense of just, like, freedom there, that all kinds of weird things would happen. Like, my friend who went told me about his roadie coming out and singing, I want to say, War Pigs by Black Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just Billy, you know, it wasn't, like, Billy Joel was doing like the, you know, traditional Billy Joel concert all the time. Like he was just kind of having fun, which is really cool.
And that's
that scale.
Yes, absolutely. And Latif wants to know if there were any Australians you know of, the Bee Gees perhaps, that played Madison Square Garden.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
AC/DC for sure.
Oh, there we go. There we go, Latif. And what happened when Elvis played MSG? I'm not going to abbreviate, actually, Madison Square Garden, because MSG sounds like he's, you know, food additives. Yeah. But yeah, but is that what you call it, MSG? Is it known as that?
MSG.
Okay, yeah. Well, there you go. Okay, so happened when Elvis played there?
Madison Square Garden is, it's a mouthful, so you gotta oversimplify things here.
I thought it was a nickname, The Garden.
It's both.
It's both.
The Garden, okay. MSG.
Okay.
But yeah, Elvis, there's an Elvis live album there from 1972, which was, you know, this kind of big thing. Because Elvis didn't really tour. Like his manager, Colonel Tom Parker, felt that it was more valuable or more lucrative to have Elvis, like, just making movie after movie after movie, you know, or doing Vegas residencies where people would come to him. So Elvis touring at all, like playing outside of Las Vegas, was an extraordinary thing, period.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Oh, and I have to be reminded for the second time where it was. Hall of Fame, that's where it was. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, March 15th, 2004, at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel Prince, performed alongside Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne, Steve Winwood. Thanks, David. I was listening. I just, you know, dates and times, not my strong point. All right. I'm chatting with music historian Jesse Rifkin about New York's legendary Madison Square Garden, part of our Rooms That Rocked series. I'm loving your texts and questions. If you're listening, you've got a favourite act or there's a live album. There's been more than 50 live albums recorded at the Garden. If you've got a favourite, call in 1-300-800-222 or text in and let me know, 0467-922-702. And let's talk about your tour that's themed around the Beastie Boys. Now, they recorded a concert film there, and for radio safe reasons, I can only refer to it as awesome. I shot that. it's not called that, but that's the safe version of the title. What's unusual about that concert film, the Beastie Boys one?
Well, as the title would suggest, and the actual title is what you said, but, you know, with an expletive inserted. They gave cameras out to people in the audience. And so it is an audience shot concert film, you know, all the footage from everybody's different cameras in the audience was sort of edited together to create this experience. But, you know, you get some concert films, like I'm thinking of The Song Remains the Same by Led Zeppelin, which is also shot at the Garden, but which is much more cinematic, and actually, you know, has large chunks of it are the Garden recreated on a soundstage. You know, the Beastie Boys concert film is much more visceral, and it's much more akin to the experience of actually attending a concert.
Well, I'll have to check that one out. The audience in the camera. So how many cameras are they dealing with? Do you know?
Oh, God, I have no idea.
Oh, gosh.
A bunch.
A bunch. Now, the really big headline acts can also get something called the Madison Square Garden Gold Ticket, or in some cases the Platinum Ticket. What does that signify?
Actually, I have no idea.
That one. Okay, there's some tier system. I wouldn't know either. I haven't heard of that. But but actually, Les has texted in with another Australian artist, Latif. The Wiggles, Jesse. Did you know that the Wiggles? We have to verify that, if that actually happened.
I actually did know that, yes.
Oh, did they? Oh, gosh. Do you know what?
They broke some record there, yeah.
Oh, when don't they? And I've met Lockie personally. I've interviewed him on air, and I thanked him for giving, you know, me my arms back for small periods of time when my kids were little. But because you're not holding them, they're just being babysat by the Wiggles. But that is the best business model that I can think of. You've got to sell full price tickets to every attendee, and at least half of the people don't really want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's got to be quite lucrative. You've said before that your particular passion is music above and beyond hero worship or nostalgia for its own sake. So what does Madison Square Garden mean in that view for music itself?
You know, I mean, anything at the scale of Madison Square Garden is sort of like inherently about hero worship to some extent. You know, so a lot of the work that I do, a lot of the stuff I talk about in my tours and in my writing is things that are at a smaller scale, you know, sort of famous nightclubs in the city, like CBGB being the best known, where there are these sort of small rooms where music communities would form and the bands would sort of emerge out of those spaces and then, you know, move up the ladder. But the Garden, it's interesting to me because I, you know, for a long time, I was really resistant to the idea of going to anything at an arena because I was so focused on small spaces and things that were underground. And maybe about 10 years ago, I just kind of had this like personal transformation where suddenly I got really interested in spectacle and in seeing things that were at that grand scale as well. And so I started going back to the garden and seeing things there too. And I think having done the research that I do, now I can see a show at an arena and still see like the human being on stage, you know, and sort of think of where they came from and how they got there, as opposed to just seeing like myth making, which makes it a more interesting experience, I think.
Oh, a couple more questions before we have to say goodbye. Uh-huh. Lorenzo, I forgot this question from Lorenzo. What about WrestleMania? I know it's not about music, but Lorenzo wants to know about that one.
There's a whole world of things that happen at Madison Square Garden that are completely beyond my purview, because it is a sports venue primarily. And I, you know, as is often the case with people who devote their lives to learning about music, I know nothing about sports.
I'll tell you what I do know.
At all.
Sports, and in WrestleMania's case, highly choreographed movement shows. So, before I let you go, Jesse, just quickly, what's the story behind the Guarded Party song, Rick Nelson? You know that one? I played it earlier.
I actually don't know that song.
It's beef. There's beef. And I wanted to know exactly what the beef was. He's singing about a gig he did at the Garden where stuff went wrong and he name drops Yoko. And I wanted to get the full inside story. Maybe that could be a whole nother investigation here on Nightlife.
Yeah. I mean, that's the amazing thing about the Garden is there's so much that happened that, like, you know, I could talk about this thing for hours and somebody else could talk about it for hours and we could tell none of the same stories
because
there's so much. But yeah, I know. I think like Rick Nelson got booed at the Garden or something and he, you know, walked off stage and took it personally and was just like cranky.
And then resolved not to be a people pleaser. I think that's what that song is about. Do your own thing and be happy with it. Well, good on you, Jesse. Thank you so much for joining us here on Nightlife to talk about Madison Square Garden. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was an honor.
That's Jesse Rivkin, music historian and author, and he runs Walk on the Wild side tours in New York City.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.